are fighting a war 30 years in the future.
Is this a joke?
Our enemy is not human. We need you to fight.
You got drafted.
I will be back.
Why is this happening? What about the teacher's deferment and the veteran's deferment?
If I don't go, they're going to draft you in my place. But if something does happen to me, you and Miri will be taken care of.
If something happens to you, Dan, 70% of draftees do not return.
Sometimes a man does what's best for his family, not himself.
Move your shirt, please.
Hey, what's this for?
It's just a test.
Oh, a seatbelt. Is it a driving test? No, you don't have jokes in the future?
This device facilitates your jump to and from the future war.
1 minute to jump.
Oh, here, buddy.
Take that. You just flip it around like that.
How are you so calm?
Long story.
Be an ex-military?
Yeah. Kind of a short story, I guess.
3, 2, 1.
In 11 months' time, all human beings in the future will be wiped from the face of the Earth. Unless you help us.
I was trying to save my daughter. If I gotta save the world to save her, then I'm gonna do it.
This is the end. The human species will disappear from the face of the Earth. We are literally living on borrowed time.
There's still a chance that we can stop this war from ever happening. So we gotta fight.
Well, it's nice knowing you.
Everybody's your host, Isaac Weishaupt, and we're doing another film analysis. This one's a good one, though. Don't tune me out yet. It's called The Tomorrow War, and maybe you've seen it. It's on the Amazon Prime. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to be blown away by the things I tell you. Blown away. My God. You say, Isaac, you've done it again. How can someone be so insane? Well, I can tell you how. You gotta watch the movie twice, because that's what I did. And the things I'm gonna show you, I'm gonna tell you about, kind of surprised me even, to be honest. The first time I watched it through and I kind of was like, I don't know if there's a whole lot to talk about here, really. And then the second time through, I was like, my goodness. Holding my beer. Holding my White Claw. It's Hot Girl Summer. So we're going to talk about the movie. I don't know, and it's going to be spoiler-free until we get to the film itself. Then I'll give you the warning. Because I do want you to sort of hear some of my preamble talk. But yeah, this movie hits on all the things. All the things. The global elite fantasies of the one world government. Against the alien threat. The determinism of knowing who's going to do what. Freedom through the warrior culture. Through the industrial complex. And you're not going to believe this, but I got a little bit of Aliens Are the Demons stuff in here. And we're even going to talk about John C. Lilly, if you can believe that. Yeah, that's right, I said it. For you OG granola wokesters, you're like, John C. Lilly, that's one of the technocrat globalist elites. Yes, yes. One of the counterculture guys. It's got elements of that in here. And again, you know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times in my life, and I plan to be wrong many more. But this is what, you know, and I just got done publishing my second alien book, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Your Delusion 2, now available on Amazon, Audible. Get your signed full color paperback, gumroad.com/IsaacW. And thank you all the people that have been buying it. And people have been dropping reviews already. Thank you very much. The first Use Your Illusion 1 got tons of great reviews. I appreciate that. Now Use Your Illusion 2 is getting it too. Use Your Illusion 2, much different than the first. It's actually all about alien films. So like, if you're into this show with the film analysis, you'd be really into the book, because that's all it's about. It's all we do. So let's talk first about the film from the high level of abstraction. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. Way too long. Way too long in my book. But I got to tell you something. Should you watch it? Yes, absolutely. I thought it was great. I thought the pacing was great. I thought the humor was actually pretty good. It's got, like, you know, some of that corny superhero humor stuff to break up the action and the intensity. Introduce a little, catharsis. But it was good. Because the film had, like, it was pretty intense. Very suspenseful. Kind of scary a little bit here and there. And, you know, Chris Pratt, this guy's so good. He's so average looking, but so good. I mean, he's no Leo. He's no Leo DiCaprio. He's no Tom Cruise. But, God is a funny way of working. You know, you can't have it all. So Chris Pratt, with his average looks, got a great sense of humor, which I'd argue might be more important. Maybe, right? Now, and funny enough, I always trash on superhero movies. Guardians of the Galaxy, those are probably my favorite ones. They're really good. Very funny. And Chris Pratt, of course, from those. So yeah, it was good. I thought it was great. A lot of people are kind of trash on the movie. I don't really get it why. I thought it was really good. It flew by. I finished it in one sitting, which, you know, that never happens for me. I had Miss Josie Weishaupt watching it with me, and she enjoyed it too. So yeah, two thumbs up over here. And plus, it was free. I mean, if you got Amazon Prime, if you've signed your soul over to the Bezos company, which I have. Amazon's like Netflix. All the conspiracy people trash on it, but I'm not. I mean, are there problems with it? Sure, sounds like it. But from the consumer point of view, can't beat it. From a book publishing point of view, can't beat Amazon. I publish all my books through them. They're great. They're great to work with. No hate here. Is Bezos going to kill us all? Sure. I'll give you that. There's that. Yeah. Because, you know, I have a very general I'm very anti-elite, so I don't really dig on the rich people too much. But I do like Amazon. Now, so yeah, two thumbs up. I thought it was great. Well worth the price of admission, for sure. I would have watched this thing in the movie theater. I thought, in fact, it was supposed to be in the movie theater. Till the big, the 2020 flu messed it all up. And then they decided to just post it on Amazon. But yeah, it would have been great in the theater. Now, I got more preamble for you. Beliefs in aliens is going up dramatically. Polls now showed at 65%. I'm going to read you from Yahoo. It says, the new poll surveyed 10,417 U.S. adults in June, ahead of the release of the UFO report mandated by Congress, which I did a whole show on already, because we read through that massive document. I read through all six pages, and I gave you the update on last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. It says about 65% of respondents said they think there is intelligent life on planets other than Earth. And 87%, get this, 87% said UFOs are not a security threat to the U.S. at all, or only represent a minor one. That was kind of surprising. Let's see here. What else? We'll skip a bunch of this. You don't care about all that. Variety, the magazine, they posted a whole article, you know, because this is how it works, right? They release a movie or a book, and then there's like this campaign tour, and all the mainstream medias push the interviews and the this and that, because it's like free advertising. It's the way it works. It's the way that showbiz works. So Variety's got this article. And they talk about the stars of the movie talk about their beliefs in aliens. You ready for this? I don't know how to pronounce her name. Ivan Strayovsky. Ian Strayovsky. She said this. She says, this is a legitimate story. Back in 2006, I was sitting on a beach cliff with somebody. Somebody witnessed this with me, and I saw what looked like a star drop down, do a couple of circles and then diagonally shoot back out into the sky, like into outer space, and I don't know what does that. Then Chris Pratt said, "That doesn't surprise me. Yvonne definitely believes in aliens." For the record, Pratt said he doesn't believe in UFOs and beings from another planet. His on-screen father, J.K. Simmons, meanwhile explained he doesn't not believe in aliens. He said, "I'm open-minded and foolishly optimistic." And then there's Sam Richardson, who plays a role in the movie, and I don't really get into it because it's not relevant to what I'm here to talk to you about, but he's in the movie also. He said, I've always believed in aliens because the idea that we might be the apex of intelligence and civilization, I mean, look at people. If this is it, then all the intricacies of molecules just kind of stopped at the maskless wearing people. I don't believe it. Ooh, firing shots. Firing shots. Betty Gilpin, she said she's not a believer, but she had a message for aliens just in case she's wrong. She said, "If you're real, I would be an interesting person for you to take up." Oh, I wouldn't. Excuse me. Big difference. I wouldn't be an interesting person for you to take up. You should take someone else. Oh, so there you go. Chris Pratt doesn't believe in them. Strelowski does. And Sam Richardson hates you because you didn't wear the mask. I know my audience. You know, anyways, okay. How much do you want to talk about the virus of 2020? Can we never talk about it again, please? Let's, okay, and then we're going to get into the film. But first, midway through the show, we're going to do a tier 4 conspiracy considerations. My man Wally Gorbachev, straight from Mother Russia. This is like a very Russian episode here today. My man Wally's going to join us to talk about all kinds of crazy stuff. We talk about evolution, the aliens, the demons, very apropos. Even abrasions. Oh my. And then at the end of the show, we're going to be joined by, well, not joined by, my man Phil Goodrich. He's a surfer. He's a painter. Phil Goodrich Art. Check him out on Instagram. He's the one that painted my UFO in my studio right now. Big supporter on the Patreon team. He made a song for us. And that's what we're going to end the show with. You're going to hear his song, and you're going to like it because I know my audience. Because you probably don't like Fauci. You probably don't trust Bill Gates. And I don't blame you. I'm right there with you. So so that's going to be a song at the end just for fun. We're going to have fun. From here on, plot spoilers coming. I warned you. I told you you should watch this movie because I'm about to ruin it for you. I would argue you should go watch it now and then come back and finish. But if you still, even if I go through this whole movie and ruin it for you, it'd still be worth watching, I'd argue. It's actually really good, I thought. A lot of people don't like it. I don't know why. I don't know what they want. But I thought it was great. Let's go. Now, this film, picture Interstellar, because that's kind of what it's about. It's about, like, time-traveling scientists, but it's, like, less serious, okay? But these time-traveling scientists, they're employed to save the world. And this sort of hidden sub plot line that global warming is what brings the aliens through, essentially. And we're going to get there. Photos. Yes, I've got lots of images from the movie. I'm putting them on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. Link in the show notes as always. You can check it out. A lot of these images, you got to see these images. I'm not going to tell you should check it out. You must check them out. You have to see them. I don't think you need an Instagram account to look at it, but I'll have a link in the show notes. And it starts out, the first scene, it shows Chris Pratt and a bunch of soldiers dropping from the sky, and they're dropping into a pool, and you're like, whoa, what's happening? And what's happening is the baptism of the new world. They're being baptized into the new global religion of the alien demons. Okay. And we'll come back to that. They just kind of tease that and you're like, whoa, what? This is intense already. I'm not even a minute into this movie. It's intense. Then they cut and they say 28 years earlier, which is 2022. And you're like, okay. And you're introduced to Chris Pratt's character hereafter. His name is Dan Forrester. So we'll call Chris Pratt Dan because that's his name. Okay. He's in suburban hell. He's parking his car. He's heading home with Bruce because there's a Christmas party at his house. He's on the phone taking an interview for a science job. And he's talking about how he's like military combat vet. Because he's married. He's got a daughter named Murray and he's going home. Now what's curious is that the camera zooms in on, because it's Christmas time, right? And everyone's got like Christmas decorations out and Christmas lights up everywhere in the whole neighborhood. There's an inflatable Satan. Yeah, like a creature, I don't know if it's Satan. It's not red, but like it's got the horns. It looks like a devil, the demons. There's an inflatable Satan for Christmas. Very strange. And there's a reason for that. Because the aliens are the demons. They know it. They're showing it to you. And, you know, you want to get real crazy because why not? The inflatable Satan is not actually at Dan's house. It's actually like two houses down. Not sure why, right? But they decide to zoom in on it anyway. And again, image on the Instagram. They go in the house. There's a big party going on. Everyone's going nuts. And, you know, he's trying to tell his wife, like, I'm doing an interview. This is the big one. And they're putting stuff away, and she's like trying to tend to the party. And if you see on the fridge, there's drawings from the daughter, Muri. And the two drawings that we see are the owl and the Statue of Liberty, which you already know where we're going with this. It's like, illuminate, confirm. We got the symbolism of the owl, which is Minerva, which is the wisdom, the lost word, whatever you want to call this in Freemasonry, the great work. And arguably, the teachings of Lucifer, because Lucifer gives mankind the technology, just like Prometheus did, right? Prometheus gave man fire, the technology, to not rely upon God. And that's what the idea of Lucifer is man becoming his own God, standing up on his own two feet through the technology, which is what science is all about. The Age of Enlightenment gave that to us. Rationalism, all that stuff. And then, of course, the Statue of Liberty is the female goddess of Semiramis. Do those play a big role in the movie? Not really. Besides the whole, like, science is technology, you know, man becomes God sort of stuff. Because that ultimately is the plot. So we find out, like, you know, there's problems with Grandpa. Dan doesn't even want his daughter to know Grandpa. Because he hates his dad. The weirdest part of this scene, right, it's this big Christmas party, and everyone's like keenly watching soccer. I'm like, is this America or not really? But it is. It's America. And everyone's all cheering for the round ball. Yeah, sports ball, soccer game. And let me tell you, I don't watch sports, but I've got friends that do. And I've been over to many times to the house, and they're watching basketball, baseball, football, UFC, boxing even. You know how many times I've seen soccer playing? Zero. My whole life, in fact. My whole life, I've never known anyone to play soccer. And I was even in the military, hanging out with people from all over the country. No one's ever in my whole life turned on a soccer game. Never seen it. I'm not saying people don't like soccer, but I'm saying America doesn't like soccer. Like, I'm sure it's fine, but, you know, and I don't do sports, so I don't get it. Sorry, soccer players. You know, and you know, to be fair, like, I was never an athlete as a child. I was always playing soccer because that's where people that can't play sports go to learn that they need to pay attention in school, which is fine, right? You can grow up, not be an athlete. Everything will be fine. You go to college, get your little degree. And then go to the CrossFit gym and hang out with all the athletes. And then next thing you know, boom. Now you're the jock. Anyway, Sorry about the soccer diatribe. But yeah, I thought it was very odd. They're watching soccer. Everyone's all into it. And on the soccer field, much like you saw in Dark Knight Rises when Bane shows up at the football game, the fabric of space-time tears open. And here comes, like, I don't know, the Space Force, the U.S. military Space Force, whoever, some military group from the future. They come in, they announce, like, hey, we're from 30 years in the future, and we're fighting an alien war, and a year from now, everyone's going to be dead.
We are you. 30 years in the future. We are fighting a war. Our enemy is not human. And we are losing. In 11 months' time, all human beings in the future will be wiped from the face of the earth. Unless you help us. We need you. Our fathers, mothers, and grandparents. We need you to fight beside us if we stand a chance at winning this war.
This is a joke.
You are our last hope.
Uh-oh, doesn't sound good, does it? Well, like I said, the film's pretty good at dropping that suspense, and that's what they do here. Then the next scene, they sort of fast forward a few years. And you hear about what's been going on since the, you know, Space Force ripped through the space-time continuum there. And you hear on the news what's been going down since these future military people came to warn us. And all of the things that have happened since.
12 months ago, we had no idea how those words would change everything about our daily lives. Immediately, jump facilities were established around the globe to send the world's military into the future and help fight the White Spikes.
The first 1,000 soldiers are headed 28 years into the future. We'll be anxiously awaiting their return.
7 days later, those hopes were dashed as only a handful of troops survived. Since only 50% of the military are qualified to jump, civilians were needed to support the war effort. So the world's leaders agreed to institute the first worldwide draft.
Yesterday, they were civilians.
But today, they
are soldiers.
But even with thousands of civilian soldiers being sent a week, the future global population is currently estimated to be less than 500,000. And with a drafty survival rate of less than 20%, many people are asking, is it worth it?
The anti-war movement continues to gain momentum.
There are riots and protests happening all over the world.
What are we supposed to do? Just throw up our hands, say, sorry, you're dying?
But why should we still be fighting a war that, as far as we're concerned, hasn't even happened yet?
These are our children and our grandchildren that are dying. We can't just stand by and allow them to be wiped off the face of the earth. That's why we need to draft more civilians.
And they talk about, like, only 50% of the globe is qualified to jump. And you later find out why that is. Because they can only send people to the future 30 years into the future, if they know they're going to die within the next 30 years. Because you can't have yourself finding yourself 30 years in the future, right? So that's why, like, they end up taking a bunch of old people generally. But you see the global government type response, just like Ronald Reagan said. Ronald Reagan told you, he said, look, if there's one thing that would unite the world together, that would be an alien threat. Verbatim, that's exactly what he said. Just like that. Now, so then we're back to, I don't know what it is now, like 2030, 2028, sometime after 2022, but before 2052 or whatever. Dan, Chris Pratt, he's a science teacher, right? And he's teaching his class, and you see climate change posters all over the room, because the film has this little hidden, not so hidden, subplot on climate change and global warming. We'll get into that later. And he's teaching, and he's like, you know, if there's one thing we need, it's more scientists. And I was screaming from my couch. I said, boo! No, we don't. No more scientists. Didn't science get into a lot of mess already? Do we need more, really? Anyway, we Dan, he goes to the, he gets called to MEPS. Very accurate to real military terminology there, which makes me wonder if the military wasn't involved in the filming of this somehow. Or, I mean, they at least had an advisor. I don't know what MEPS stands for. Military Entrance Processing something? I don't know. But that's where you go. It's where you strip down to your little panties and the doctor checks you out. But they go in there. Chris, or Dan goes into MEPS and they put his arm in a big machine and they tell him when he's going to die. So the idea, the philosophy here is that there's no free will anymore in the future. There's only determinism. They know, because these soldiers are from the future, and I guess that's how they figure it out. I don't really know, but they can check his biological data somehow. It had a very, like, sort of like Minority Report vibes, right? So there's no free will in the future. And that's what they want. They want us programmed and predictable. It's exactly what they want. Now, what's curious, because he puts his arm in a machine, they flash by a whole bunch of documents, and a lunatic like me, I'll sit there and pause and rewind and check all these documents, and you see on the documents something they don't really talk about in the movie, but on the documents you find out he gets hemmed up for domestic violence a couple years later, like in 2024, it says. So I think it's like 2022 when he's got his arm in this machine. And they find out that he's dead at the age of 47. Okay. Well, let's see here. I'm trying to do math on the fly here. That doesn't matter. Now, he dies on October 13th, 2030, it says. Okay. Which I'm trying to do the math in my head. Does that even add up right? 30 plus 18. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, anyway, so he dies. They tell him he dies on October 13th, 2030. 7 years from the thing, right? Because I guess it's 2023 then. Well, now, what's curious here, you know what October 13th is. Not only is it the day after Crowley's birthday, Aleister Crowley, but it's actually the day that the Knights Templar got arrested back in 1307, which is the reason that the number 13 is considered bad luck. So curious enough, October 13th, when the Templars got arrested, is also the day that our protagonist is supposed to die. What role do the Templars have in the movie? I don't know. There is a religious theme to it, though. There's a religious theme to this movie, a spiritual theme. Because you find out that the soldiers that they're, you know, drafting, I don't think I mentioned that yet, they're drafting soldiers to go to the future. The way it works is they draft you, they send you to MEPS, they see if you're going to die in the next 30 years. If you're going to die in the next 30 years, they're like, cool, you made it, you're going to jump to the future. And you go to the future for 7 days. On the seventh day, you come back. And we'll talk about why that is. But for now, that's all you really know when you're watching the movie. And I immediately thought, 7 days? Like the number of days God took to create the world? Yeah. Same thing. And what you find out, because Dan's wife is a therapist, and she talks to the soldiers that return from the future, that make it, that live through the 7 days, and she's like, look, they're all messed up. And she doesn't want Dan to go. She's like, Dan, you can't go. These people are getting jacked up if they even make it back alive. And she's like, she pleads with him. She's like, you got to go talk to your dad. Go talk to grandpa. And I think he can help you remove that armband that they've integrated into the flesh of his arm. He can't get it off until he's done serving his mission, right? So he goes to talk to dad, to grandpa. And J.K. Simmons shows up, and he's ripped. He's got them CrossFit muscles. It's his dad. His dad is toxic masculinity to the core. He's making fun of his son's beard for being patchy. We hear that he's got disdain for the U.S. government, because you'll find out he's kind of a conspiracy guy. And in the interaction, they reveal that, like, this is a real broken up relationship. Dad, he bounced on the whole family after mom died. And he tells Dan, he's like, look, I was real angry and real violent after Vietnam, which explains the domestic violence that Dan supposedly succumbs to in the future. But Dad's like, look, I was real violent and angry, and I left to protect you. And Dan was like, no, you left because you're a coward. And bada bing, bada boom, he doesn't get his armband removed. He could have done it, but he had to fight with his dad. So now he's got to go fight them aliens. Today we have another mini episode of Conspiracy Considerations. As you know, this is the Tier 4 on the Patreon or VIP section. It's your opportunity to get on the show. And you tell us your ideas, and I just shut up and listen. And today we're joined again by the returning champ, Wally Gorbachev, straight from the USSR. And he's going to break down the ideas of evolution. Dinosaurs? Are they fake? Are they real? We'll find out. We'll gloss very quickly over the peripheries of Abrasions. We're going to talk about demons and aliens. Oh my goodness. This is a controversial episode. So yeah, give it a listen, and I'll hit you on the other side of this. All right, Wally, you wanted to get back in the ring, so to speak. You want to talk about some stuff.
Yeah, evolution.
So this is a topic I don't consider myself intelligent or smart about enough to prove or disprove it. It seems like there's lots of supposed quote-unquote educated smart people that subscribe to it. I don't just...
On both sides, I would say.
On both sides, yeah. I agree. I think on both sides there's arguments and smart people that say it's true or not true. And just from my sort of, you know, bystander understanding of it, I don't necessarily believe it. It seems kind of silly. But,
that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's me, you know, this is my hot take on it. I honestly know nothing about it besides the very basic tenets of it.
Here's where I think it all starts. It's in school. And in all of our science textbooks as children, we've seen like the chapter in the book that says the simple cell. And I would argue, unfortunately for the textbooks and for our middle school teachers, there is no such thing as the simple cell. Now, I am not a biochemist, so I need to try to understand things a little bit more simple. So my example to give is the Ford River Rouge plant in Dearborn, Michigan. At one time, not too long ago, it was the largest integrated manufacturing facility in the world. It had 100 miles of railroad within the plant, and under one roof, all of this, it receives raw limestone, iron ore, and coal at one end. The plant would manufacture its own steel, glass, and paint, and they have an automated production line that builds engines, other manufacturing lines for all the rest of the stuff. It assembles multiple models with multiple options and multiple colors, and your simplest cell is more complicated than the River Rouge plant.
Okay, I like the angle there.
All right, so now here's the cell. A cell has a force field with specialized signal receptors, gateways, and security guards called a plasma membrane that monitors everything that goes in and out of that tiny little cell. It has a central memory bank that holds a master library in which everything in the cell is coordinated, called a nucleus. Inside the nucleus, there are automated factories and product manufacturing facilities called the nucleolus, and all of this is powered by power stations that power this miniature city called mitochondria. There is a collection of robots called the Golgi apparatus that process, package, and ship the various products and vegetables that take care of waste management. There's also hundreds of thousands of types of these 3,000 atom big robots that do all sorts of things that function to make the cell work. And it does this simple cell does something that the River Rouge plant cannot do. It replicates its entire self every 3 hours.
Interesting. And you're talking about like the cells of, you know, inside your blood, right? You're talking about like cells of a human body, right?
Any cell. I mean, it could be as simple as a bacteria, which people think is a little bit more simple, but this could just as easily apply. It's a huge thing. So my argument is that if the River Rouge plant had to be intelligently designed, then of course your tiny little cell, and there's trillions of them in your body, were also intelligently designed.
Ah, interesting. Okay. All right. I dig it. Yeah. And I'm not a, like I said, I don't know enough about evolution to make an opinion on it. I don't know. Like, I have enough doubts in science. Like, you know, I know there was always talk about the, what do you call it? The missing link. And then there's like the ideas of like, well, if like everything evolves, like why are there still sort of basic, you know, chimps out there or whatever?
A half a wing isn't really that useful. I don't really believe that.
I actually talked to a priest about this many years ago, and he said, like, because there's conspiracy people that don't believe dinosaurs existed, and again, no clue. But the argument he had, because I said, you know, if God made the world in 7 days, like, where do the dinosaurs fit in? And he said, well, you know, a day could be like a million billion years. And I was like, oh, okay, well, fair.
That argument is a little bit more of a liberal view of it. And hey, that's fine. Yeah. I'm not saying they're not brothers.
Do you think dinosaurs existed or no?
Yeah, I think dinosaurs existed.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are you in the camp of Earth is only 5,000 years old or whatever?
So, time is interesting because time is part of reality and matter and space. It's all one thing. If you talk to a scientist, they'll never just tell you about time, and they'll never just tell you about space. They'll always say space-time. So I think there is wiggle room in the 6 days of creation.
Okay, I dig that.
Yeah, so here's an interesting thing. So they'll say that, talking about the millions of years thing, we're kind of getting into that right now with talking about the 6,000 years. They need these millions, well, I think it's like they're up to 15 billion years at some point. So they say, if you have enough time, then these things, of course, will manufacture themselves. You know, it's like the Jurassic Park line, life finds a way, or something like that. But so the building blocks of life are amino acids, and there's hundreds of them, but we have 20 of them. Here's the thing about amino acids, though. They make the proteins into the 3D robots that make up the cell. So there are lavorotary cells and dextrorotary cells. One's left-handed, one's right-handed. So if they were to occur randomly, you would have half left and half right. So back to the millions of years thing, if you just give it enough chance. If you had 100 million monkeys typing on a typewriter, and you did that for 100 million years, eventually you would get the Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. Well, that's silly for a lot of reasons, but here's the thing. The left-handed ones are what we have in our body, and the right-handed ones are poisonous and lethal to the left-handed ones. So imagine how far the monkeys would get if every other stroke of the key, they died.
So it would take hundreds and hundreds of millions of years with that sort of argument.
Well, here's the thing. You're talking about something like 10 to the 850th power, and mathematics says that anything that's 10 to the 50th power is considered impossible and absurd.
Interesting.
So
okay.
It doesn't work out, and that's why you have the people that say, oh, well, there's multiple universes all in bubbles bunching in on each other, and every time we make a decision, another universe spawns, because they just can't get over how well designed this is.
Yeah, that's where you know, I'm not anti-science. I think science has its place. I think it's more of an art. It's more of a theory, and then there's this worldview. And the worldview, this is where like I join up with the rest of the conspiracy truthers, because I do see that there is this sort of theocracy, this idea that science is the end all be all and always correct. And it's like, there isn't anything that's been more disproven of its own self that exists. I mean, like science, like I'm not saying science is completely wrong all the time, but like it disproves itself constantly. So like, why would we go off of science as our guiding light, you know, question, you know, unquestionable, when it's always proven, it's often proven itself wrong. So like, that's where I'm with the truthers, where I'm like, yeah, they want this to be a technocracy where they say, well, this, you have to trust the science. The science is always true, when clearly it's not.
Right. So I think all of this is really beautiful, and it is a fingerprint of the creator. And would you walk into the Louvre Museum and kick a hole into the Mona Lisa?
Sure. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you would. Oh, you would do that?
Well, I got to get famous. How am I going to get famous? No, I'm just kidding. No, but I would not.
Well, then, breaking news, Isaac is pro-choice.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. I think that's one of the consequences of evolution. If you don't see how beautifully made all of this is, then you can't. You start killing babies.
Yeah, and that's where, because I'm like a pro-choice guy, because I'm obviously not pro-abortion. Like I wish it didn't happen, but I'm more in the camp of like I would rather people have that their decision with their doctor, but like I also see where like abuse of that happens. So like,
Bill Clinton, equal but rare.
Maybe that's a good viewpoint. I just am like, as a man, I'm like, look, this ain't none of my business. So like, because there are instances that I'm kind of like, well, I mean, sometimes, but anyway, we're running out of time and we don't want to start talking pro-choice.
So evolution, I think, is wrong. And I think that's where you get these ideas of demons. And evolution is a fairly new thing. So I don't think you can have aliens without evolution. I think the worldview of having aliens from other planets is very dependent on evolution.
I agree. So you think that there's... Do you think there's maybe a conspiracy, a global conspiracy or something to that effect, of getting us to accept evolution? And that's... generally what I think when you watch, I don't watch a lot of mainstream media, but I watch Bill Maher, right? And he's a pretty liberal guy, but a lot of his ideas, I kind of agree with him on a lot of things, because he's not that liberal, like sometimes when he's talking, but he is always like this pro-science, like evolution, you know, case closed, evolution is the truth. Do you think that they want us to accept evolution so that we will then have a good argument to accept aliens? Is that what you're thinking?
Not only aliens, but how about communism?
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you have to... evolution says there is no meaning to life. You're just a blob of plasma that washed up on the sand and got really lucky, so we can murder you. That's Mao, and that's Stalin, and that's Hitler. They were big fans of Darwin. People forget that The Origin of Species isn't the name of the book. It's The Origin of Species and something about, you know, which race is the best.
Yes. Yeah, right. Because I remember Darwin had some very sort of racist tendencies in some of his writings.
Yeah, but, so institutionalized racism. Yeah, OG woke on that one. Huh. I'm in.
Good stuff, man. All right. I like it. Anything else you wanted to cover real quick?
Listen, I just want to tell the audience, thanks for listening, and find yourself a church and accept Jesus as your savior. That's it. ABCs, acknowledge, believe, and call upon the name of the Lord Jesus.
All right, that's brother.
Link in the description.
I'll put a link in the show notes to the ABCs. And that's the, is that the same video we posted last time? If, you know, in case people haven't seen it yet, maybe?
That's right. Just going to shotgun that as many times as I can.
JD Farad, right? That's his name?
That's right. Thank you, man.
Okay. All right, brother.
Have a good one.
Thanks. You too, man.
Whew, what do you think? That was Wally's ideas. And I've got a couple links in the show notes he wanted me to pass on to you. Some powerful messages. Some YouTube videos you got to check out. And if you want to be on the show, if you want to be on tier 4, the top tier, you can go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher or IlluminatiWatcher.com and go to the VIP section. Those are two options for you. And we'll kind of get back and forth on some email, and you can, this can look however you want. Some people just send me an audio clip. Some people want to do a little back and forth like me and Wally did. Some people don't even want to do it. I talked to my man Joe Nips the other day. We just talked for a half hour. So it's whatever you want it to look like. And this is kind of like, you know, I have the three support systems, and Rockfin's great. Like, each support system has its own thing, right? Depends on what you want. Rockfin is probably like your best bang for the buck, where you'll get access to all of my shows, including the exclusive Rockfin show, Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist. We do live streams over there. We talk about the more controversial stuff that I can't get with on these other feeds. I do a couple shows over there on that one. But you unlock all the bonus Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture episodes, and you'll get Breaking Social Norms, the show I do with Mrs. Weishaupt, uncensored, ad-free, all of it. And you go to rockfin.com/creator/Isaac, link in the show notes. But, you know, the Rockfin doesn't have the tier 2, 3, 4 system with the shout-outs and conspiracy considerations and all that. But like I said, everyone wants a little different flavor of stuff, so I'm just trying to give you what you want. So you can check out all three supporter platforms and go ad-free. Link in the show notes as always. So he goes home. Wifey's packing up because they're getting ready to draft Dodge and get the hell out of there. And he's like, look, I couldn't get the armband off. He's like, but I'll be fine. And she's like, okay, dude, whatever. Your funeral. No, she's very upset about it. And she's like, but you got to break the news to Muri, the daughter. So he goes in the backyard. He's like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm digging for stabby jabbies. Because previously, we didn't talk about this, but previously she talked about how, you know, because she's a, I don't know how old she is. I'm not good with ages. 8? I don't know. And she's talking about how, she's like, did you know the tuberculosis stabby jabby was, they found it in the worms and the poop? So, like, two mentions so far of that, right? Which I found was very, you know, this movie's got a very pro-science angle to it, okay? That's if I was to encapsulate this whole thing is like, science saves us from the demonic aliens. That's the subtitle to The Tomorrow War. And what's curious, because again, like, I'm kind of neurotic, and I'll put the image on the Instagram so you can see for yourself. If you look very closely to the hat that Muri's wearing, it says, and I quote, big journeys begin with small steps. What does that mean? Are they talking about, they're talking about a slippery slope. They're talking about the totalitarian tiptoe. That's what it's all about. One step at a time, taking away your rights to protect you, in big air quotes, protect you from fill in the blank, demon aliens, whatever. And, you know, the very next scene, it cuts immediately to big speech about bravery and fighting this big enemy and uniting into one world government military.
You people, you all have something in common. Whatever your age, occupation, ethnicity, or gender, whatever your background, you are now heroes. You answered a call. It was a cry for help across time. It's the voice of your children. And they need you. The sacrifice that you make now is for them. For the first time in human history, the armed forces from every nation are united against one enemy.
I'm Sergeant Diaz. I am not your friend. This is...
7 days from now, when you're sent into that war, you won't be fighting for your country. You'll be fighting for the world.
Which is what Reagan was saying when Ronald Reagan said this stuff, right? You hear them talk about it right in the movie. For the first time in human history, armed forces from every nation are united against one enemy. Like, is this like a military propaganda film? I did some casual researching online, not too heavy, because it doesn't really matter. I didn't see that. I didn't confirm that. I'm sure as time goes by, we probably could. But I would guess this is, the timing of it is very suspect. Right after they drop the big UAP disclosure report and they say, look, we don't know. We need lots of money to figure it out. Which happened right after we're like, we're going to make a Space Force. I mean, the timing's all very suspect. And I don't, Dr. Stephen Greer talked about this. He seems to think there's a big, they're going to use this as a threat to scare people. So, I don't know. Time will tell. All right, where are we? Okay, so they're hyping the crowd up. They're hyping up the soldiers to go jump into the future and fight aliens. And they're getting the briefing. And you hear about how this whole thing works. Because you've got questions like I did, I'm sure. You're like, why don't they just jump prior to the aliens killing them and kill them then? Well, take a listen. They'll explain it.
Welcome to our force, also known as Research Force. You'll be joining your counterparts in 2051 at a fortified research facility. Your function is to add your knowledge and skill set to theirs and prevent our extinction.
Excuse me, why don't we just jump back to earlier in the war?
The jump link doesn't work that way.
Jump link?
It's the temporal displacement device housed in a fortified location in the middle of the ocean. And it's what makes all your armbands work.
Time only flows in one direction. It's like a river. The jump link placed two rafts on that river, 30 years apart. Now we can jump back and forth between them, but both rafts will always keep moving forward.
So why can't we just build more rafts?
The jump link tech is held together with chewing gum and chicken wire. We've barely managed to make one very rudimentary wormhole. If we weren't in an extinction level event, we'd still be jumping lab rats. Now we can jump you to 2051 and we can jump you back, period.
Every 6 days, the white spikes disappear. They crawl back into their nests.
We call it the Sabbath, their day of rest. And that's when we insert troops.
Okay, but why don't we have pictures or videos that would help us to know what we're up against?
The consensus was that if the public saw what they'd face when they reached the future, it would become virtually impossible to fill that hangar.
Okay, cool. Next time someone asks that, you should probably just lie.
We good now? Do you get it? You got it? All right. It's like two rafts on the river, see? Okay. But in that exchange, you heard that the white spikes, which are the aliens, they rest on the seventh day, and they even call it the Sabbath. The aliens are the gods. We're going back to the old pagan beliefs of these alien gods. The ancient aliens are the future gods. So there you go. Direct tie-in to the seven-day thing, to the religious element of this. And later on, you'll find out that not only these aliens are the gods, they're the demons. So to zoom back out, we're like 30 minutes into this film, okay? And they're getting ready. They're going to get jumped to the future. Good special effects. Really suspenseful. Lots of action for like an hour. But it's actually really good. They move the story along. You see they get jumped into the future and the pool baptism, excuse me, how unprofessional. The pool baptism thing happens, which was teased at the beginning of the film because, again, it's this religion. He's being baptized into this new world, into the new religion of the alien demons. Quite literally, he's being dunked into the water, coming back up. It's the new world. When they're in the future, they're doing stuff, and we see the aliens, the white spikes, as they call it. And they're actually pretty terrifying. They actually did a pretty good job. Now, they're not as evil looking as H.R. Giger's aliens, but pretty close on the like terror scale. I thought they were pretty good. In fact, the guys who worked on the alien design, I looked it up. They said that Alien and Hellraiser were the references. And I was like, okay, bravo. Bravo. Two great movies. And the best scene in the fighting sequence. I'm going to wait until we get to that part. makes more sense if I wait. So, so they're fighting aliens, they're doing stuff, and Dan, he catches up with his unit, and we find out that it's actually run by his daughter, Muri. Obviously 30 years in the future, so now she's an adult. Okay? And he doesn't know it at the time. He kind of calls in to check in, and she pulls up his file, his electronic file on the little iPad or whatever. And guess what we see? Again, you only see it if you got eyes of a crazy person like I do, and you do. The logo for the military command that he is in, and it says something, something, biotechnology research. It's the Saturn. It's the three-dimensional cube with the wings. Yes, the Phoenix. The resurrected Phoenix. The rebirth. Can you believe it? I couldn't believe it. I had to pause it because I was actually looking at the script on the iPad of his electronic file to see what it said, and that's when I saw the damn Saturnian cube. And again, you got to check out the Instagram at AsiWhatsApp. Like, subscribe, link in the show notes as always. And you'll see it. So they go on a mission to save, because Dan calls into the command. He talks to Muri. He doesn't know it yet. And she's just like, oh, Dan Forrester. Okay, you're Mr. Special Forces. All right, I need you to go on a mission. You're going to save some lab nerds. So they go to do it, but the lab nerds are dead. So mission changes, they grab some hard drives, some lab vials, a bunch of the group dies, then they get sent to a FOB in the Dominican Republic. Previously they were in Miami, that's where the lab was. None of this matters. And this is where Dan learns, he finally learns that Muri, the commander, is his daughter. And like, she's like mad cold to him, and you're like, why is she so salty right now? And she tells him, like, you abandoned the family. And he's like, I didn't do that. And she's like, yeah, you did. I'm from 30 years in the future, I know. And it turns out he abandoned his family just like his old dad did, just like grandpa. The apple didn't fall far from the tree. So then they're like, they got to cage up a queen alien, right? She's the queens are the most dangerous, and they want to capture her. Then and this is where the coolest scene happens with the aliens. They sort of need to scoop up this cage with the queen alien with a helicopter, and here come all the male white spikes, and like, boom, out of nowhere they fly. Like, what? You didn't know they flew yet. And it's like, damn, they don't have a chance. Now they're flying. So they get the queen, they get her back to the, I don't know where, some other lab. And they design this, they're like, I know, we're going to design an enzyme neutralizer toxin that'll kill the queens. You know, science. We'll figure it out. And they do. They synthesize whatever, some toxin. And the mission now changes. Now the mission is, okay, Dan, you need to go back to 2022 with this toxin vial and start mass producing it. Then you're going to jump back to 2050 and kill all these damn aliens. But meanwhile, Miri, like, she's going to die in the process. And Dan, he's not thrilled about that. He's very upset about this. So he's like, I don't know what the game plan is. If he's going to try to suck her into the thing to take her back to 2022, it doesn't matter. They try to get Dan to the jump link to get back to 2022 with the vial before these invade, because now the aliens are invading the base there, and Muri dies, so it doesn't matter. She dies. Dan makes it, though. He jumps back to 2022. He's a mess. He's a damn mess. Just like, you know what? His wife knew. In fact, maybe that's why the Semiramis, the Minerva, the owl, maybe that's why that was on the fridge, because the ladies always know, okay? Wifey knew it. She's like, I knew you'd be a damn mess. Look at you now. No, she didn't say that. But like, she's the all-knowing Sophia. She's the goddess of wisdom. She knew what was going on. Dan just being a dumb warrior. Now he's all jacked up. So So they're talking, and he's like, look, I went to the future. Muri was a commander, and she died. And now I'm sad. But I've got this toxin. I don't know what to do now. Because in the midst of all that, the jump link breaks. And now they can't go to the future anymore. Okay? And Wifey, you know, she's the Sophia. She's the goddess of wisdom. She says, hey, dumbass. What if those aliens got here before 2051? What if they're, like, chilling somewhere, waiting to, you know, like Cthulhu coming up from the waters? Maybe they're frozen somewhere. We can go kill them now. Maybe they're here right now. We can kill them before they, like, awake from their hibernation. And he's like, you know what? That's a great idea. I'm going to go ask one of my students. He's this volcano nerd, and we'll go talk to him. They talk to him. He's like, look, like 1,000 years ago, there was this volcano in China, and it blew ash out everywhere, and it made it all the way to Russia. Because they find out there's like ash in the claw. Long story short, you don't care. Watch the movie if you want the details. I'm not here for details. I'm here to move it along and tell you about Illuminate Confirm. And they're like, hey, okay, cool, volcano nerd. Pull up this climate warming model and see what ice caves are going to melt in the next several years in Russia. And boom, they figure it out. And yeah, they're like, oh, snap. So the aliens, they're here in Russia and they're frozen. But climate change and global warming thaws them out. And by 2050, they're fully thawed out and they start killing everybody. So we kill ourselves through climate change, through global warming. So Dan and the whole Motley crew, they go to the Department of Defense, Secretary of Department of Defense, because they have access to him. Don't ask why. And they're like, look, we figured it out. The aliens are frozen in Russia. We need to go over there. And he's like, no, politically, we can't do it because of this, that, and the other. And they're like, fine. But they're warriors. And they're like, we're going to go there on our own. Grandpa, you're coming with us. Let's go. Quit doing CrossFit pull-ups. Let's go. So they go over to Russia. And they're snowmobiling around. They get some electromagnetic disturbance. And they're like, wait a minute. This might be it. And they go down underground like a good initiation would. And there's the UFO. It's frozen in ice. The Sophia goddess knew it. The volcano nerd knew it. It's frozen in ice just like the thing. If you read my analysis or listen to the show, I did a whole podcast. I mean, half of my book is free, honestly. You can listen to the podcast. But you don't want to do that. You want to support me, don't you? You can get the book, Use Your Illusion 2. I got analysis of the thing in there. And that's the same thing. The UFO crashed here and it's been frozen ever since. It's in Antarctica in the thing, but I digress. So they see the UFO. It's frozen in ice. And they're like, well, now what do we do? And they call CrossFit Grandpa. They call him Conspiracy Santa. and Conspiracy Santa says, yeah, okay, so we can go to the UN with the proof and they're going to debate it until we're all dead. Because, you know, he's like the anti-government guy, right? And he's probably right, to be honest. So they're like, look, let's just kill these damn things. Now we've got a bunch of vials of this toxin. Let's just go in there and clean house. Let's catch some bodies. You know? These aliens are about to catch some fades. So they're going to the UFO. And this is where things got... my jaw dropped. It dropped. And I think a lot of people, maybe this went unnoticed. But they go into the UFO, and they find the pilot, the cockpit, and it's a totally different kind of alien. It's not the white spikes. The white spikes are in the UFO. They're actually cargo. They're in like these little wombs, these little polluted womb. They're in these little polluted wombs. But I zoomed in. And I got, again, Instagram, you got to see the image of this thing. You won't believe it. The alien navigator, the pilot of this UFO, to me, from my insane old point of view, looks like the demon Pazuzu. And it even has its little arm sticking up like Pazuzu does in the statue. You know what Pazuzu is? That's the, Pazuzu was an exorcist, right? You've seen Exorcist? Your mother sucks D's in hell. Pazuzu is the demon in Exorcist. Wikipedia calls it the king of demons of the wind. The demon of the wind? That sounds like a UFO if I ever heard one. But yeah, I mean, this thing looks just like the damn thing. And again, you got to see the images on the Instagram. You won't believe it. My jaw dropped. I said, they're showing us the aliens are demons. Not demonic or evil, a demon. So anyway, they're in the cargo hold with the white spikes. They're all in the wombs. And they start hitting it with the vials of stuff. And they start kind of start waking up. And the queen wakes up, and because the queen's like, you know, pretty gnarly, and she gets out of there. She gets out of the UFO. She gets out of the ice cave, and now Dan and Grandpa, they got to go kill it. But Grandpa, he's been doing push-ups. He's been doing pull-ups. He's got that cardio game, and they catch up, and they kill it. And there you go. Done. World has been saved. All the aliens are dead. Just like that. And, you know, in the denouement, the Department of Defense secretary guy who denied them the mission, he takes credit on TV for what Dan and the crew did. Puffing his little old chest like a badass. But it doesn't matter. The world got saved. Who cares? Dan gets home. He reunites with the family. He lets Muri meet Grandpa finally, old conspiracy Santa. And life seems pretty good. Because now the future's been changed, and it will never happen now. Muri won't die. Dan won't do the domestic violence thing. He won't abandon his family. He won't die prematurely. Life's pretty good. And that's it. That's the end of the movie. Good movie, right? Now, in conclusion, I got a long conclusion here. We're not done yet. Where they go in Russia to find these UFOs was in Lake Baikal. Now, I found this curious because Lake Baikal shows up in a bunch of like ancient aliens kind of stuff, like you see on History Channel and all them alien UFO shows. Well, Lake Baikal in Russia supposedly had some USOs, the submergible ones, the ones that are underwater. And there was ones, I've seen a TikTok, I can't find it, but there was one that, it was playing a clip from one of those ancient aliens type shows, and it said that the USOs were frozen in underwater caves, and these people went diving, and they saw them with their own eyes. They saw aliens. They saw them. Then I found an article from Siberian Times talking about it in 2015. I'm going to read to you from it. It says, initially, of the UFOs in Lake Baikal. It says, initially, these were covered up by the authorities of the USSR, but later, they were revealed by the Russian media. In recent days, there have been unconfirmed reports in Russia that American director Steven Spielberg is planning a documentary based on these weird and unexplained accounts. At the time of this writing, this appeared to be a hoax, though it was unclear who planted the stories in the Russian media. True or not about Spielberg's interest, the lake is perhaps the biggest focus of UFOs in Russia. The versions of extraterrestrial activity at Baikal, edged by mountains and containing one-fifth of the world's unfrozen fresh water, relate to supposed aliens seen by military divers in its depth and large spaceships hovering over its gray, moody expanses. Steven Spielberg. Apparently that's not true, right? Like, it hasn't happened yet. That would be curious if he did. Mr. E.T. himself. Mr. Artificial Intelligence itself. And then there's a 2012 BBC video I'll play for you. The audio here, it's only 2 minutes. That confirms this is a hot spot.
A group of about 50 enthusiasts has arrived on the shores of Siberia's Lake Baikal as part of an expedition in search of UFOs. But why Lake Baikal?
Here in 1958, there was a Tupolev 154 airplane crash. There are some reports from the locals that a UFO pursued the aircraft till it reached Baikal's waters, right here. And there were frequent reports of UFO activity around Baikal. So this is the reason why we decided to meet here. I hope that we're going to be lucky enough to shoot something interesting.
Equipped with scientific and homemade devices, they hope to capture any out of the ordinary activity.
This is a radiation warning device, and our new device, made in Irkutsk, so far the only copy, is a universal abnormal activity detector. It measures infrared emissions, electric fields, and magnetic fields. We can monitor the sky, the objects there, and can estimate them depending on the levels of the indicators.
Some of them claim to have already captured UFO sightings on camera.
At first the object did not move, but it had a peculiar glow, flashing with different colours, blue, red, yellow, green. We started watching it, and a few minutes afterwards the object began to move chaotically, not like a helicopter or a plane or any other terrestrial machine which can fly.
The expedition, thought to be one of the biggest of its kind in recent years, started at the beginning of July on Ruski Island in the Sea of Japan and is due to finish in Moscow in September. Aziz Nuritov, BBC News.
So yeah, it's a hot spot, and you hear about the 1958 UFO crash, and they were monitoring electromagnetic fields, which is exactly how it happens in the Tomorrow War. That's how they find the UFO at Lake Baikal. Finally, Muri, the daughter, science. She is, as a child, she's into stabby jabbies. Then you hear her talking about it later. And she also, you know, she figures out the toxins that kills the aliens. And this is all like very science, right? Pro-science. Because in science, they have this attitude that the human body is a computer. And with the right inputs and outputs, you can kind of steer the behavior. Which is, I don't know, true in some senses, right? But it might be an oversimplification. And what's curious is that throughout the movie, they make jokes about the Miami Dolphins throughout the whole movie, right? It doesn't really make sense. Like, why do they keep talking about the Dolphins? Well, I got a theory for you. And it's a little out there, but I'm going to float it. I believe this is a veiled reference to John C. Lilly. This is the guy who came up with the whole idea that the mind is just a biocomputer. If you've never read the document, Programming and Metaprogramming in the Human Biocomputer, I'd advise you to do that. If you've ever seen Altered States, that's what that movie is about. Which, fun fact, starred Drew Barrymore in her first appearance. Which, fun fact, Steven Spielberg had Drew Barrymore in E.T. as her first, like, real big main role. So there you go. 6 degrees of separation. Now, Lilly, John C. Lilly, Dr. Lilly, he was one of those like spiritual scientist gurus, and he was all about taking hallucinogens to make contact with these aliens. It sounds crazy. He called it the Earth Coincidence Control Office, which to me sounds a lot like Mandela Effect, kind of, right? The coincidence control, right? Sounds very Mandela Effect-y. But he's the one that invented the isolation chamber. He was studying human consciousness, and this led him to research dolphins. That's why we're talking about the dolphins, okay? Because he was trying to facilitate communications with dolphins because he thought we were all connected as one, like, consciousness, just like we're connected with the aliens. So I was like, if I could learn to communicate with dolphins, I can communicate with the aliens. In fact, he was part of the early SETI he was in the Order of the Dolphin. I don't know. Some secret society of dolphins, I don't know. But he was, you know, he was trying to get communications with dolphins. These dolphins get horny, okay? And they started flirting with one of the lab ladies, and she would do hand parties with the dolphin. I'm not making this up. It's all very true. But now, I don't want to talk about Ham Party with Dolphin quite yet. Well, not at all, really. But the here's what's curious, because I was reading up on John C. Lilly on Wikipedia. Listen to this. It says, Solid State Intelligence is a malevolent entity described by Lilly in his 1978 autobiography, The Scientist. According to Lilly, the network of computation-capable solid-state systems, electronics, engineered by humans, will eventually develop into an autonomous bioform. Since the optimal survival conditions for this bioform are drastically different from those humans need, I guess they're saying, like, you know, humans need like water and air and all that stuff. Anyway, Lilly predicted or prophesied, based on his ketamine-induced visions, a dramatic conflict between the two forms of intelligence. So he's saying, and that makes sense, right? Like electronics and bits and digital whatevers. Maybe they're a little more capable of handling, I don't know, changes in the environment better, which I don't know if that's true either. I mean, like electronics need to perform optimally. They have to be at like, you know, 70 degrees or whatever. But I guess you could have like sub-freezing temperatures, like quantum computers. But anyway, I thought that was odd because like we've talked about making contact with entities from another dimension. Nick Hinton talked about these, I forget the term for it. There's a term for like this idea that like AI creates these entities from the future and like we're talking to them right now. Sounds crazy. I'm going to get him on the show. I'm going to get him on the show sometime in the future. I'm reading his books, talking to him right now. We're going to set it up. When is it going to happen? I don't know. Sometime this year. And we'll talk about that because I think it's very fascinating. Now, if you read the History of Human Sciences journal on modified human agents, some document about John C. Lilly, it goes a little bit deeper into it. It says, he described a realization that modern communication technologies are more intelligent than humans. During one session under ketamine inside the tank, Lilly begins to envision the future of computers and information networks. As he explains, the human biocomputer consists of organic matter and water and relies upon the balance of a controlled ecosystem. But around the mid-20th century, he writes, man conceived of solid-state computers, beginning the creation of a new form of intelligence, at first in communications networks, and then in computers that could do self-programming as man himself does. Which is kind of like AI, right? The machines take over. And it says, blah, blah, blah. Written in the 70s, it conveys a worldview that incorporates emerging environmental concerns prominent amongst the West Coast counterculture. Lilly claims he saw his experiences inside the isolation tank as a warning that if humans advance the solid-state entity any further, man would eventually become obsolete. Within this belief system, he came to believe that extraterrestrial solid-state civilizations were trying to manipulate communication networks on Earth and began to see evidence for this everywhere he went. He finally understood the killing of whales by humans as part of the programming of solid-state intelligences. The preservation of biological life relied upon the reconnection of advanced biocomputers, such as those of man and dolphins and organic extraterrestrials. So he's saying, if I can infer this, man will kill himself through climate change and we're birthing the new species, the transhuman, and that will live beyond us. Which is kind of what the movie's warning us. It's got that subtext of the global warming and the aliens coming. Are the aliens already here? That's what happened in the movie. The aliens were already here. The aliens are the solid state AI things. Now, I never read The Scientist, this autobiography he wrote. I found a copy. I read the introduction, and that's as far as I got, but because it looks really interesting. In the intro, written by Timothy Leary, he says, start thinking of your brain as a biocomputer. Start thinking of your minds, plural, as your software. You know, sloppy disks that you use to process your thoughts and create images on the screen of your consciousness. Which, to bring this all back around to me, that's my argument. In Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, use your illusion 1 and use your illusion 2. That's basically what I'm saying. He's just saying it a lot smarter. I had that mantra, thoughts become belief, become reality. That's what these guys are saying. Mind-blowing stuff. I told you this is a wild one. So there you go. In conclusion, again, this movie, it hits on all of the global elite fantasies, globalization through alien threats. Threats? Determinism. Predicting your future and your movements, like Minority Report. More power given to the industrial complex. Showing us the aliens as demons. And with the hint of all the dolphins, with no hand party though, with the hint of all the dolphins, it sort of takes you down this path of saying, oh my god, they are, this is a John C. Lilly idea, that we created these things. The aliens are analogous to the solid state electronics, and they're going to kill us if we don't take care of our environment. So there you go, your move. Do what you want to do with that. Now I'm going to play for you. And look, again, not to keep plugging my books, but if you want to learn more about these topics, because I think they're all very fascinating, I wrote 2 books on the subject, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1, Use Your Illusion 2, on Amazon, on Audible, signed copies, gumroad.com/IsaacW, link in the show notes. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. We're going to go out with my man, Phil Goodrich, dropping the you're gonna hear the lyrics of the song and you're gonna have a good chuckle. Until next time, my friends, stay woke.
This is Phil the Phantom, angry artist. Fuck Tony Fauci, fuck Bill Gates. Gonna both accountable before it's too late. Wuhan got the agenda 21. Hunt them all down till there's nowhere to run.
Your financial ties bind us, the truth really finds us. The science is mandating social control. Mask hide our humanity, testing our sanity. Crypt and deception all take their toll.
Your philanthropy reeks like sodomy. Keep your stupid jab far away from me. Your philanthropy reeks like sodomy. Keep your stupid jab far away from me. It's a reckoning. We didn't forget about you, Melinda. You can eat a bag of dicks.
Your financial ties bind us, the truth rarely finds us. The science is mandating social control.
Mask hide our humanity, testing our sanity. Crypt and deception all take their toll.
Fuck Tony Fauci, fuck Bill Gates. Hold them both accountable before it's too late. Wuhan got the agenda 21. Hunt them all down till there's nowhere to run.
Philanthropy reeks like sodomy. Keep the CDC far away from me. Your philanthropy reeks like sodomy. Keep that CDC far away from me.
Gia, this is a reckoning. The mRNA vaccine is a test run. They want us debilitated like the soldier from Metallica 1.
Fauci, funded gain of function, accountability none. Where's the perjury charges? Bill Gates, also black out the sun. Credibility done, we have seen connections.
This is real life, revenge of the nerds. Yuval Harari, Gordy Rose, Elon Musk. These nerds are gonna kill us. Shout out to Isaac Weishaupt.
Fuck Tony Fauci, fuck Bill Gates. Hold them both accountable before it's too late. Wuhan got the agenda 21. Hunt them all down till there's nowhere to run.
It's a reckoning. This is Phil the Phantom, angry artist.